Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last night, CNN obtained a proof-of-life video that shows 15 girls alive. They're 15 of the 276 Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped 2 years ago by the Islamist group Boko Haram in Chibok, Nigeria. Distraught parents marched in Abuja today, angry that the Nigerian government hasn't done more to rescue the girls. Now, there are so many forces at work in this awful story. Politics, society, religion, and of course, misogyny as well. But Nigerian playwright Ifeoma Fafunwa says that if the world is to make an honest reckoning of how and why women are oppressed, women must ask themselves, what's my responsibility? What did I do to create this world? Those are some bold questions that Fafunwa dares to ask in her play Hear Word, Naija Women Talk True. The play makes its international debut in Cambridge tomorrow. And we spoke with Ifeoma Fafunwa earlier this week and began by asking her what inspired her to create the play.
I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, and I went through high school there, and then I moved to the U.S. and went to college. And years later, I married a Nigerian and moved back to Nigeria. And I noticed how women were balancing so much weight. They had to look good. They were working. They were looking after the kids. And then there were all these other social issues that they had to juggle, like, you know, managing in-laws and, you know, keeping the pain inside, and infidelity in Nigeria with men is sort of a, you know, it's a norm, et cetera. And so I decided to study that, and I decided also to study why, when single women walk into a room, the group of married women, you know, almost take the oxygen out of the air. So, you know, they look at you in a way that kind of makes you stop breathing. And I wasn't single, but I still got those looks. And I decided, let me break this down. Let me understand why this tension.
And so you went about studying all of these things by interviewing women, right? And
yes.
So what kind of things did they tell you? Because the stories that we hear in the play are based on these interviews?
Yes. At the time that I came back, the Kudirat Initiative for Democracy was doing a program where they were collecting stories from hundreds of women. And I was a part of that project. And then years later, I decided to, I had gotten enough information just socially, just asking, just being a very nosy friend or, you know, person you met. And I decided to do my own focus groups. And I've even done focus groups with young people as well, very young, and university students, high school students, and married women, etc. And so we collected stories.
Were these women willing to open up to you immediately? Because you talk about some very personal and intimate and challenging things in the play.
No, not immediately. And that's why it took some years.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little more specifically what are some of the stories that we hear in the play?
The stories range from light topics like how women don't support other women, mother-in-laws. There's a one where a mother-in-law tells the audience how she's going to break down her daughter-in-law and make her more content, because in some traditions, the daughter-in-law has to go live with the parent, or the son is living with his mom, which is similar in places like Asia and, you know, South America. So it starts with lighter issues like that. Then it goes into your typical rape, battery, female genital mutilation, and those heavier issues, which are on the table right now across the world, mm-hmm. in terms of in the media. There's a lot of attention. But what is unique about these stories is that it shows how women themselves, being the gatekeepers for men, are the ones who do these, you know, who perpetrate these, you know, these crimes, these, you know, who oppress other women, because women are the ones who perform female genital mutilation. Women are, you know, mother-in-laws are the ones who, you know, tell their son-in-laws that your wife is too loud, we need to bring her down a couple notches. and other women, business women or women in jobs, putting other women down.
So this is really interesting because I imagine that there are a lot of people who don't want to hear what you just said, because the common assumption is that women are always the victims of these things. And you're holding women to task as well for being part of the problem.
Yes. And this show does two things. It asks women, where are you part of the problem? And where are you as a victim not taking responsibility for stepping away from being a victim? So it's a slightly different way of looking at the problem.
That's tough. That's a tough stance to take.
It is. But we've seen so many of the other ways of showing this. And yes, the perpetrators here are legislature, you know, lack of proper laws and process to keep, you know, to make things happen for women and to protect and keep women secure. Then you have women themselves who won't work together, and so they can't affect much change. And then you have men who keep order, you know, who keep order, and it's not their priority to worry about if a woman is, you know, goes into a police station now in Lagos. If a woman walks into a police station and says she's raped, they ask her for a fee to open a file. That's just part of the landscape in Nigeria. It's not a formal thing, but it's just a process. There's no real process. There's no rape kit.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And so it doesn't actually make much sense to report a crime.
Huh. Well, I think this is an interesting moment to actually hear a little bit from the play. And this is a moment from the second half of Hear Word. And let's just play it. I mean, you can help us understand what's happening here.
I say, he beat me. Then they say, what again? What is what again? Is that not enough? A man must sometimes beat his wife to help her understand her place.
And that's actress, Nigerian actress Omonor, right?
Yes, yes.
So what's happening here in this scene?
This scene is a family meeting where Omonor, the character has been called in. She's a wife and she's been beaten regularly. She's called in by his family, her husband's family, to explain why she grabbed his private parts in, and he reported that as, you know, the family jewels. I mean, this woman must be crazy to do that. So she's explaining that she did it because the beatings were regular and she's been complaining and no one is coming to her aid. The family argues back and forth that she must have done something every time she got a beating. And so she after lots of banter, she looks at the audience and says, I need to explain to these people that I mean business. And she turns to them and says, yes, I did it. I grabbed it and I squeezed it. And if he beats me again, I will take a knife and I will cut it off. And she winks at the audience. So it's not that she's going to do that. But they, you know, all the men in the room are like, you know, they all say, okay, well, you know what? We'll talk to him.
I wonder, why did you decide to do it this way? You know, you just explained that there are cultural forces, political forces, legal forces, these very big systems in Nigeria that make life very difficult for women, that oppress women. Why not write a play that focuses on that, which you do in part, but you also then bring in this extra piece of like, okay, women, what's your role in all of this? But why not just focus on the systems of oppression and not necessarily hold women to task for being the victims of that oppression?
There is a mindset. If women themselves are apologizing to other women for not being married or not having children, then, because it's not the men doing it, it's the women. It just begins, if you think about the fact that it's a woman who raised the man who decided it was a great idea to take 276 other people's children out of their school in the middle of the night.
You're talking about what happened to
Boko
the girls
Haram.
When Boko
yes,
Haram took
yeah,
them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Chibok girls. Yeah. It's also a woman who raised the man who decided that instead of investing in schools across the country, I'm going to use that money for myself. Myself and my cronies are going to buy houses on Bond Street or wherever else, or what they do with that money. It's women that are raising these men who believe that it's okay to take what is someone else's and create situations where there's tension, there's poverty, there's misery, and there's, you know, it's safer to go to a church than walk into a public hospital. It's safer to pray away your sickness than walk into a place where you walk in with one thing. And I've made a joke before that you walk in with malaria and you come out with rigor mortis, you know.
You know, I don't want you to think that I'm resisting the idea that women should be held responsible as well, because they're also part of the solution. I'm not resisting that idea, but to me it seems I'm curious for those. Let's take, for example, the women that you were talking about who raised the men who joined Boko Haram and then kidnapped all those poor girls. I mean, it seems to be heaping a lot of responsibility on those women. I imagine maybe, you know, what if they did try to raise their sons differently? There are still all these social forces at work that may have made their personal efforts meaningless or useless, that are overwhelming.
There's tradition, there's culture, there's religion, there's the whole colonial era and what that did also to women. But the truth of the matter is there's enough information out there, and there are enough ways of looking at this problem from the perpetrator. I'm trying to say we need to look at both. So I show the perpetrator, but I'm showing this play is meant for the victim. Mm-hmm. The victim needs to ask how and why and where am I responsible? Because only then is there a transformation of mind. I'm not looking to create some sort of frenzy where everybody gets together and does like change.org or something like that, and then you think you have an immediate resolution to an immediate problem, like let's find the Chibok girls. I want to understand why. Why are we here? What is it in your mind, in your being, and where are you anywhere in the world, not just as an African, but as a woman? Where is it similar in your life? When you look at a picture of a hip-hop star or a rock star or a baller, and he has three women on one side and three women on the other side, that's polygamy. Mm-hmm. Why do six women feel they are equal to one man? It's a global issue.
Are there any aspects of what you've written and what you present in Hear a Word that reflect or course through experiences you've had in your own life? I mean, as we began this conversation, you are a Nigerian woman as well.
Yes. Yes, and I have experienced as a young person, you know, some of these things. The child molestation piece there is the first piece I wrote, and it's from my own experience several different times in my life, starting at like 4 and a half. Not in a major way, but just in a passing way, and in the fact that, you know, you don't know the explain that. But that's not, it's not particular to Nigeria. It's something that happens all around the world. You know, you wonder what is different about Nigeria is that sometimes when you talk to the man, the perpetrator, in Nigeria, there's a belief that you're kind of helping or initiating a young person into their sexuality. It's in a dysfunctional way. It's not a selfish thinking. I don't know how to explain it. It's very strange. But I've talked to, you know, people will feel like the man feels like he's helping the young lady cross into a different area of life, the teenager crossover. Now, and almost everything, just the piece, for instance, that has six women gossiping about a woman that just walked by. Mm. That's an interesting piece to me, because it's the society just saying we won't support, you know, different groups of women gossiping about other women they don't know and holding women down into this box containing their behavior, the way they dress. I once just recently was in the back of a car with two bank executives, and these are women high up in their companies, and they were discussing how young women dress now and how terrible it is, and what if some poor man now happened to see that and couldn't help himself and rape them. And can you imagine now, this poor guy now has gotten himself into a situation because of them. So there was no responsibility attached to the man's behavior. And I think that's the pervasive thing here. It's not just about women and the aspiration that they be married and have children. It's the lack of assigning any responsibility to men. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the constant pampering of the male ego. Don't correct your husband in public. You know, don't, you know, there's so many rules in the society about how you behave. A man cannot eat alone. There's a piece there that says a husband should never have dinner alone or warm his own food.
So when you ask the audience this fundamental question of how are you going to look within yourself and become part of the solution, what's your answer? When you ask yourself that question, what's your answer?
For me, I have demanded many things in my own life, maybe to the comment of many people that know me. And sometimes I even feel bad for my husband because he doesn't get the perks that his friends get, you know. So for me, I just want women to ask where they are limiting their possibility and where they are limiting the possibility for them to contribute or take positions of leadership in their firms, in their communities, in the country, because that's the only way we begin to be forward thinking. Right now, I think our problem in Nigeria, and I'm tired of the rhetoric, I want it to be positive. We need to be forward thinking. We need to think about the future, about children, and about what corruption does and what these behaviors do to limit us as a nation. It's time. It's time for change.
Well, Ifeoma Fafunwa is director of the play Hear Word, Nidra Women Talk True. It's making its U.S. debut in Cambridge thanks to the ART, Harvard Center for African Studies, and other departments as well. The debut is on April 15th, and we have more information about that at radioboston.org. Ifeoma, it's been such a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
And before we wrap up today, we wanted to bring you up to date on another major story today. Just this afternoon, a Connecticut judge ruled that families of the victims of the 2012 Sandy Hook mass shooting can move forward with a lawsuit against the gun manufacturer that made the rifle used in the massacre. Remington Arms Company and other distributors and sellers named in the case had claimed that a 2005 federal law provides gun businesses general immunity from civil lawsuits. Judge Barbara Bellis denied that claim today. Nine families of victims and one survivor are suing the gun companies, claiming they were liable for selling a weapon not fit for civilian use. More on that later on All Things Considered. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.